main topic of this week's parsha, which is the concept of a chok. As you probably know, Rashi at the beginning of this week's parsha says that Korah Azuma, the red heifer, is the classic example, one of the classic examples at least, of the concept of a chok, a mitzvah which has no revealed reason to it. The word, we have three types of mitzvahs in Judaism. We have mishpat, which are those which are quote-unquote logical laws, chukim, which are those which are quote-unquote not given logic, and then we have edus, which are commemorative mitzvahs. Yeah, I haven't said anything yet.
For mishpat, the reasons that we come up with the mishpat are those the actual reasons that the reasons behind that mishpat, or we logically can understand it, but there actually are maybe it's a different reason, but we don't understand those reasons. We just try to bring it down to our level.
Yes. Both things you said are correct. Thanks for your ask. We'll get to that. Okay? So, again, as I said, there are three types of mitzvahs. Mishpatim, which are those which are quote-unquote logical. Then chukim, which are the ones which don't seem to have a revealed logic. And edus, which are commemorative in nature. So, I will get back to the issue of mishpatim later on. But first, let's start dealing with the issue of chukim.
Yes. One of them is commemorative,
yeah.
But I thought none of this is commemorative, that those times of years are what they are because
of the times
of years or whatever.
Okay, so you see, the problem is you learn too much mysticism for your own good. Yes, they have all this kind of mystical overtone to them, but they actually have commemorative events, right? The Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim, to commemorate the exodus from Egypt, and so on and so forth. So the... So the idea of chukim is a fascinating one because actually we are, unique in this respect, but the question is, why, as opposed to B'nai Noach, we have chukim? In other words, the mitzvahs which Hashem, not talking about other religions which have all sorts of weird rituals, like say the Hindus or things like that. But the question is, why God would have given us more than the seven mitzvahs he gave the Bnei Noach, the non-Jews, which are eminently reasonable and rational mitzvahs, right? To not be involved in adultery, to not be involved in murder, to not be involved in theft, to not worship other gods, and so on and so forth. Most of them seem quite reasonable, and they can seem logical. So therefore, why do we have additional mitzvahs which seem to transcend logic? Why? Why mishpatim not suffice? Why do we also have chukim? That's really the core issue which we have to discuss today. In order to understand that, so let's talk about what difference is between the word mishpat and the word chok. I was talking about the word a too. But what's the word mishpat come from? What's the root of mishpat?
Judgment.
Shafat is to judge. Shin, pei, tet. Shin, pei, tet is shofat, and you add a mem, and you get mishpat, right? Then you add chok. What does chok mean in Hebrew? Anybody know what it means?
Yeah, it's a statute.
What? Statute is a legal translation, but I want a more literal translation. You're right, it is a statute. It's a tough one. Means to
if mishpat is a judgment, has to a judgment, a chok has to do with
carve. If you carve something, if you carve a stone, you set the chokik in the stone. You carve the stone, which is interesting. It's a funny thing, why exactly the word chok should have to do with carving. What exactly does that mean? So this is and it has two meanings. A chok besides the meaning carve, has two other meanings.
One of them is, like you said, a statute,
which is a law. It's interesting that statues are carved. So statues, carved, I know it's not spelled precisely the same way, but there's an interesting parallel there. And then there is, chok also is considered to be a portion or allotment. The chok is used in Tanakh, so that means the portion I'm supposed to have, the allotment I'm supposed to get, chok means all these three things. Okay? So the question is how all these things relate to each other. And then of course you have the edus. The edus obviously comes from the language of aid, which means to bear witness. So obviously we see that mishpatim are mitzvahs which have to do with judging, which means bringing balance to the world, right? And now all the mitzvahs which non-Jews have are balancing mitzvahs. They have to bring the world to a certain balance, a certain equilibrium, to make things function on a proper, I should say, perhaps a civilized level. That's what mishpatim are all about. Eidus also makes sense to a large extent, because just like, you know, we have the 4th of July to commemorate the independence of the United States of America, you have Bastille Day in France, you have, I think it's called Guy Fawkes Day in England. Every country has its own national day which commemorates something unique which happened in history. And the more there are, the better it is, because the more days off you get. So therefore, obviously, it's worthwhile to have Eidus. So that makes sense, because it commemorates key seminal events which took place in our history, and it gives an opportunity to have great sales. So the idea is, Mishpat and Eidus are both pretty rational, you know, things which you can understand. So in fact, there's some systems in which Eidus are not classified separate from Mishpatim, but rather the Chukim and Mishpatim. Eidus are not broken out, although in the Chumash itself, as I said, Eidus appears, but there are times when it just appears as Chukim and Mishpatim. Okay, now, the word Chok, which comes from carve, the statue, the portion, had several different approaches which we find throughout the generations. The first approach, which I want to bring out today, is the approach of Reb Sadia Gaon. Reb Sadia Gaon lived in the mid-900s, and he was in Babylon, in Iraq. And he said that chukim are given to us to discipline us. In the mid-900s, 10th century. Okay? They're given for discipline, meaning there isn't necessarily any reason behind shatnez, right? Now it's aware wool and linen together, not necessarily any reason. There might not be any reason for kashrus. But, just like an army has to have a uniform, has to have a certain manner in which it trains itself, regulations by which to abide in order to forge a common identity, and not just a common identity, but a sense of mission, and a sense of adherence to that mission, and a willingness to go to battle for that mission, So too, we have to have our uniform, we have to have our mode of eating, our mode of dress, our mode of conduct, which forms us into a cohesive unit where everybody's functioning similarly, everybody has the same degree of allegiance, everybody's willing to give up their lives, if necessary, for this great cause. So, according to the side of those, you could look for reasons, but it probably is a futile attempt, because in reality, it doesn't matter. But actually, the primary reason for the mitzvah is not the reason behind it, but rather the discipline, the regimen which it imposes. In fact, there's an Erie, I think, somewhere. I forget what it is, but the Erie says somewhere that don't ask questions as to why on this day you bring 7 karbanos, 7 sacrifices, another day you bring 8, another day you bring 5. He said, you can't ask why. If the numbers are in anything else, you ask why also, right? There's no inherent reason why. We just want to differentiate them one day from each other. So therefore, each day has a different number of korbanos. Now, this actually sounds very, very grating to the modern ear. because we've been accustomed, what Tzadik Gaon's approach is not well known, and certainly once you get to know it, you probably don't like it, because it goes against everything which we have been heard from time immemorial, meaning from the Rambam, which is that mitzvahs, the chukim actually do have reasons.
The Rambam holds chukim have rational, albeit hidden, reasons.
And he goes to a lot of mitzvahs in the Moreh Nevuchim, in his book, The Advice of a Perplexed, and he gives reasons for them. A lot of those reasons have to do, interestingly enough, with avoiding idolatry. For example, he says that the reason why a person is not allowed to, you know, shave his head in the shape of a bowl is because the idolatrous priests in the old days used to do that. And now it's used a razor because the idolatrous priests used to use razors. And so on and so forth. He goes through many different mitzvahs and gives reasons for them, which are rational reasons even for the chukim. Somebody else who followed in this approach is the Sefer HaChinuch. Sefer HaChinuch goes through all 613 mitzvahs and gives rational reasons for all 613.
Is Sefer HaChinuch the commentary on the Rambam that listed out the mitzvahs?
No.
Different.
It's based on the Rambam. Yeah, it's based on the Rambam, but it's not the Rambam, it's not a commentary on the Rambam.
Does the Sefer
HaChinuch actually, for example, one of the famous mitzvahs the Sefer HaChinuch gives is there's a mitzvah not to break bones in the Korban Pesach, but when you eat the Korban Pesach, you're not allowed to break bones in it on the night of Pesach, and the Sefer HaChinuch explains because the night of Pesach we're supposed to act like Bnei Chorin. Bnei Chorin means not just free people, but nobility. And noble people don't break bones in order to get at the marrow. So therefore, this mitzvah, which otherwise would seem to be an irrational chok, not to break a bone in the Korban Pesach, takes on, from the Sefer HaChinuch perspective, a very rational reason. Yeah?
The idea is not that Mishmah also crossed their mind when, even before you discussed the different parts of the Sadi HaGaon Rambam,
even just by the mere measure of
coke, that's why when you asked the definition, I couldn't quite put anything in words, but the first thing I thought of was not the definition.
That's good, but then you see the problem with that vis-a-vis
Rabbi
Sadi Gon is because, so what's the
Nishma? Understand.
But you're not supposed to understand. Rabbi Sadi Gon, understanding is not the name of being fulfilled.
So the logic is reversed.
True, right? But it's not quite granted, but it's not quite the same thing as Rabbi Sadi Gon, because Rabbi Sadi Gon, according to Rabbi Sadi Gon, there is little point in trying to seek a reason for a chok. It's just, you know, like, might be a fun thing to do, but you're not necessarily going to come up with anything which has any validity, because the primary reason this is given is for discipline.
So, you know, to your problem, like, let's say, saying that the reason we can't shave our, Hashem told us not to shave our beards in a certain way, was because that's what idolaters at the time did. So, if that's true, why isn't there a mitzvah to not, do certain things that idolaters do today? These are eternal mitzvahs, so how can you...
There is a mitzvah to what idolaters do today.
Right, but I mean, this is a specific mitzvah based upon something that only that time, of what they did then.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that a problem? Because if that can't be the reason for the mitzvah, otherwise the mitzvah would be changing as you went along.
Well, the assumption is, according to the Rambam, is that these forces always have, whatever reason they found it, very, very wonderful thing to shave with a razor, so this can crop up again any time in human history. So therefore, it might be right now dormant, but you never can tell when some razor is right around the corner. So therefore, you have to be vigilant at all times. That's what I assume around moment there. Yeah.
Well, now they have you're right, razors are kind of like it now. They say, yes, we've improved on the razor.
Oh.
Instead of having one blade, it has two blades. And instead of having two blades,
it
has three blades.
Why do you keep contract of this?
Don't
answer that.
I watch it too much, and I have a problem watching
too much
TV.
Good part. So
now they have, footless. Pretty soon they'll invent a razor that's like nothing but blades. You can, cut your cheek off.
That eliminates any need to shave anymore. So the Rambam, and as I said, the Sefer HaChinuch has this approach. Now, a very similar, although not quite the same, is the Sheikh of the Rambam. The Rambam says, the famous Rambam in Parshas Ki Teiseh, the Rambam says, And based on the Chazal, he has the Chazal for this, the Medrash, which says, mitzvahs were given
before refining.
The Medrash says, do you think God cares, makes a difference to God, if you slaughter an animal from the front of the neck or the back of the neck? It doesn't make any difference to God. What does God care? It doesn't do anything to him, because he can do whatever he wants with the bird, and it doesn't matter to him what you do with the bird. Rather, mitzvahs were given why we chose to slaughter from the front of the neck, not from the back of the neck, because it's more humane, and the mitzvahs were given to refine human beings. Mitzvahs were made to provide us with refinement. So therefore, in each and every mitzvah which we have, for example, that mitzvah which you just spoke about, shechita, right? What the shechita would otherwise be a chok, right? Why do you slaughter it that way? And why don't you run a knife through it, or whatever other way you have for killing it? Because this is supposed to teach a human being how to be humane. At the same time, I think it's also supposed to teach a human being that it's not an antiseptic procedure to kill an animal, because you have lots and lots of blood. So therefore, these two things go together. So if the person held mitzvahs were given and calibrated in a very specific way in order to teach you refinement. You don't have to understand how the mitzvah works, according to Ramban, in order for it to work. But it does work. It brings about refinement to the individual.
Do you mind signs of character?
Yeah, sure. You might not understand how, but it does. Actually, I'll come back to Paraduma later.
Couldn't Ramban and Ramban's view be Kamali?
You could, right. They're very similar. They're very similar. And Ramban is when he brings down, not as the argue of the Ramban, but he expands the concept of the Ramban. Okay? So these are, so far, three approaches, which are the major approaches in the Rishonim, among the ancient Jewish sources. Then we come to the period of the Achron. There are a couple of other Rishonim who weighed in on topic, but people are lazy, others, but let's leave it at this for now for the Rishonim. And then we come to Achronim, and the Achronim, the first one which we should speak about, which is very similar to the Ramban, is the Mesilas Yesharim. The Mesilas Yesharim is the Moshe Chaim Lutzado. The Mesilas Yesharim says that mitzvahs were given in order to accomplish a person's Ramchal, the Moshe Chaim Lutzado, in order to bring a person to Kedusha.
He's
in the 1700s. Right. So he died in 1747. What's Kedusha? Kedusha is, of course, sanctity or holiness. A person is put in this world to accomplish a high level of sanctity, a high level of holiness. However high that level can be, each person is different. The mitzvahs are that which may give the person Kedusha, and they do so by giving a person, very similar to the Ramban, by refining a person and making him a sholem, a complete and whole person. That's what gives a person the capacity to be holy. So the sholem obviously is built on the assumption that you get higher and higher levels of sanctity until the highest level is Ruach HaKodesh. You're worthy of having the divine spirit rest upon you. That's the highest, the pinnacle of accomplishment. Yeah.
It seems that it sounds like he's saying basically, isn't discipline and refinement almost coincide with one another? If you're disciplined, you can be
refined. I don't think so. I think soldiers are pretty well disciplined, and they're not always the most refined people in the world. Not always. Could be.
Well, let's think
usually
knight.
Not.
Let's think knights.
Knights
at this point, they were considered very refined.
No, they weren't. It's just a myth. They are the most corrupt, boorish people of the Middle Ages. You got to read the real history books, not the Knights of the Round Table. That is just, doesn't work that way. Yeah.
Secondly, the Ramchal, when he said Kedusha...
That was good. I like the way he said that. That was good.
Ramchal?
Yeah.
Wasn't Kedusha, wasn't it just a theory? Wasn't it just a, not the fact, but the way to go that is, because we lost the Rishonim, because they were not as holy in the world, so maybe these things were put up so we can get back to where we were?
I'm not so sure I would agree 100%, but let me tell you what I think. It was actually that around the mid-1600s, late-1600s, mid-1600s, the Maharal was the first person who really went in this direction, the mitzvot began to be reassessed on the basis of Kabbalah, of mystical approaches. And the reason why this is so is because the central and germane figure in Kabbalah is Dari. Dari Zal lived in the 1500s in Tzfat, and since he was a revolution, till then Kabbalah was an absolutely secret thing. Very few people studied Kabbalah in the open, and certainly people didn't live lives which are based explicitly on Kabbalistic practices. Dari Zal came and changed everything. So that actually, in fact, was from the time of Dari. So people, it wasn't that they lost, perhaps so much that they lost the Kedusha of the Rishonim. That may be a factor. But primarily they had developed a new perspective on things. The new perspective was a much more mystical perspective. And the concept of Kedusha, as defined by the Ramchal, the thing which has to do with divine spirit, is very different than a Rishon would have defined Kedusha. In fact, the concept of Nevuah, as defined by most sources in the later sources, is very different than the Rambam's definition of Nevuah, prophecy. But in the Rambam, prophecy is an intellectual state, right? You have a very, very powerful intellectual inspiration that is prophecy. According to the later, more mystical sources, the prophecy is communication with God. It's not an intellectual state. You can be a moron and be a prophet too, right? So as long as you have direct communication with God, that defines you as being a prophet. See, the interesting thing is, according to the Achronim, according to the later sources, there's a very big difficulty in two parashas from now. Parashas Brit Bolak, right? How did Bilam get prophecy? He was a Rasha. Why does God speak to him, right? So there are all sorts of possible answers, but it's a very difficult theological problem. Because if his communication with God comes through sanctity, he had the opposite of sanctity. How do you communicate with God? Like the Rambam, it's not difficult at all. The Rambam holds the greater of the intellect to a certain extent, regardless of how we find the character is, the more likely that person will have prophetic inspiration or prophetic even communication. Because it's a state of intellect, not a state of communication based on merit. And so the Rambam actually holds, if I recall correctly, that Aristotle was close to Nevuah. Because Aristotle was so great in his... I once tried to listen to a tape on Aristotle, somebody was a book on tape, I found to be the most boring thing I've ever listened to. But yeah, that's why the Rambam is the Rambam and not me. So the Rambam thought Aristotle was akin to prophecy because of Aristotle's high intellectual level. So the...
nothing to do with Kedusha anyway.
Nothing to do with Kedusha, right. Not in prophecy, not with Kedusha. But the Rambam held Kedusha as a concept, but it wasn't the focal concept point for the Rambam. But the Rambam's focal concept was intellect.
So, like, how, so Rambam was, or older than the being, like Shmuel and Avi, and so how was Rambam look at them? And very brilliant human being. So not because some inspirit like divine, but their divine inspiration comes through their intellect. That's it. Right. Okay. Very big lift off. I don't know if the Rambam, I guess we call it emotional stuff. So the Ramchal with the Kedusha thing
is really primarily, I think, inspired, and Ramchal was one of the biggest Mekubalim, the biggest mystics of all time, and I think that this inspiration, which from Dari Zal, it begins to show up in Ramchal. Now, it's interesting because in the Sefer Sushari, he assiduously, I think, he assiduously avoids Kabbalistic concepts. It was remarkable, Ramchal actually was, as I said, one of the greatest Kabbalists of all time. Yet when the Sefer Sushari was written, you could read it and not know that the Ramchal knew any Kabbalah whatsoever. It's a remarkable book. So therefore, what you know, it's hard to know that Ramchal is basing his ladder, ladder going up towards levels of Kedusha on Kabbalistic theory, but it is all based on Kabbalistic theory. That's where it all comes from. By the way, I should tell you, I have, the family who have the Yeshiva High School education, I have antibodies towards the Nesil Sushari. Because in high school they ram the Nesil Sushari down our throat, and since that time I am not capable of learning the Nesil Sushari. It's very hard for me to actually open up and learn it, even though it is a wonderful safer. Yes?
What would you say is the difference
between Nesil Sushari and Kol Tzavos? The Kol Tzavos is much more focused on character refinement, not on sanctity. The Kol Tzavos is far more concerned also with what you think. What do you believe in your mind? You know, 30 ways to accomplish bitachon. You don't have that in the Mesilas Yesharim. He's not concerned so much with your mind, what you're thinking, and the refinement of your character as to your engaging in holy practices. I think that you're going to copy the difference between the two works. Yes?
Can you explain real quick the Yeshiva?
I know the book exists, but
why don't they not have letters from Elijah, volume 5? It's Yivot Eliyahu. Mechtav
Eliyahu.
Because it's a new volume. No, it comes as a set.
Yeah, you look from 1 through 3, then 1 through 4, then it now comes 1 through 5. Essentially, what you said. I bought my set when it was 1 through 3. I happened to add on the 4th and 5th volumes as they came out. So, but one time, for about 10, 15 years, it got 1 through 4. I don't understand. You think it's a conspiracy?
My brother says there should be a volume A.
There should.
There should. There isn't.
Why don't you donate it? Go to Tavius and buy the diamond. Another couple of interesting schools which are related to that are the school of the Nefesh HaChayim and the school of the Chassidim, which I associate mostly with the Tzaddik and the Piasetz, and I'll get to that in a minute. The Nefesh HaChayim is Reb Chaim Volozhiner. It's interesting, Reb Chaim Volozhiner was one of the great students of the Vilna Gaon, if not the greatest student. We actually say his brother was a greater student. His brother died very young, but his brother was considered to be the greatest student of the Vilna Gaon. Reb Chaim was considered to be the second or third greatest student. So Reb Chaim Volozhiner wrote a paper that was founded in Volozhin Yeshiva. Besides that, he wrote a paper called Nefesh HaChayim. Nefesh HaChayim, there must be a bunch of copies in this room.
So this is Reb Chaim that's like a big moment?
No. It's not it's Reb Chaim Brisker, the one who was born in Finland. Yeah, that's many generations later. Five generations later. The Chaim Volozhiner in the Nefesh HaChayim proves or demonstrates, based on the Zohar and Kisvei and the writings of the Rizal, that there's a system. And the system is one in which the mitzvahs are like the gears which activate the system. The system is one in which you do a mitzvah. This causes all sorts of wonderful things to happen in the supernal, that means the spiritual world. And in turn, that causes a positive impact on you as a human being, on the totality of the Jewish people, and on the physical creation as well. As a matter of fact, point the Nefesh HaChayim, this is a very controversial thing Nefesh HaChayim says, it's a closed system. By that I mean, God has nothing to do with it. God put the system in place, and now human beings make the system work. Whereas every time we do mitzvot, we bring more Kedusha to the higher realms, and that Kedusha comes down to the lower realms, and we're building. And when we do the opposite occurs, when we do Averos, when we do transgress, we ruin the higher world, and that then in turn comes down here and ruins things down here below. The physical world, the Jewish people's situation, and so on and so forth. Reb Chaim Volozhiner goes so far as to say, a person constantly walks around with him his entire life with his Gan Eden and his Ganon. You're always walking around with all your mitzvot, and all your Averos, because it's all being written on your soul. Right? It's not written in some book in heaven. It's on your soul. It's all imprinted on yourself. And that's why, so Reb Chaim Volozhiner says, the only thing which is undoing Avera is tshuva. Because otherwise, there's no such thing as changing your soul. It's written there. You can't just do a mitzvah and cancel it, because both aspects are there. And when you die, those things, those mitzvah Averas that you did, they become your Gehenna. You're surrounded with it in your lifetime, just can't feel it. Sometimes you can, but you usually can't feel it. And when you're dead, then no external stimuli, then you'll be able to feel it very well. Conversely, when you're dead, after you finish the anguish and pain of Gehenna, then you get the reward of Gan Eden, which is inherent, intrinsic in you. It's not even God rewarding you at that point, for an Nefesh HaChayim, but rather you created your own reward according to the system which was put in place. So therefore, the word chok works out very well. This is an essence. There are pathways carved, etched into creation. And those pathways are activated by the mitzvahs we do. And each and every mitzvah activates a specific pathway. You might not know what that is. Or, if you're great Kabbalist, you might know what it is. And in fact, it might have nothing to do with the rational explanations of the mitzvah. But rather, it can have to do with where the mitzvah is plugged in to the Olamos HaGadolim, which sphere it corresponds to, which world it corresponds to, which aspect of the divine influence corresponds to. That is the reason why God gave us the mitzvah, in order to activate those higher realms, which in turn brings bracha down to the world. Okay, that's how it's going to be. The, as I said, Nefesh HaChayim is interesting because actually God has very little room, role to play in this. And that's the way, according to Nefesh HaChayim, God designed the world because God wanted the human beings to be a Tzelem Elohim, to be themselves like they are God-like. How are you God-like? Just like God creates worlds and destroys them, so too you create worlds and destroy them. Okay? So that is how Nefesh HaChayim is playing.
Notion that
some
of the heretics have
where
they say, God created the world, and he just let it
alone.
He doesn't do anything. And the world just plays out. It seems
that
he's saying the same thing, but on a spiritual level.
Yeah, but you say, but according to those, according to deists who say God created the world, let's say Thomas Jefferson and the other renowned deists who hold that God created the world and left it on its own, so the fact you're doing good deeds doesn't bring any specific merit to the world.
But spiritual character-building aspect of that thing.
Well, that's very important. That makes a very big difference, right? Okay?
Well, God created an order system where it's
rather than a magic. Right. Well, the truth is, even that's kind of reason, there's some way in which you can involve God in the system, right? For example, you daven. Right? Davening, by definition, is involving God in the system. There are ways in which God is involved. I'm exaggerating the fact. But to a certain extent, it's man who controls the system as opposed to God. And that's a very interesting perspective, which I think is very attractive in many ways. And really, Nida Arizal, with all the Olamos HaGadolim, to come along and say to you how the things were down here done in physical mitzvahs impact on the heavens in order to understand the way such a system. Now, this is because according to the Rambam, the primary mitzvahs are the mitzvahs which are intellectual, right? Because you're really supposed to understand, they're supposed to have rational reasons, and the rational reasons which they have impact upon you as a person. Right? So you can think about them. The chukim you gotta do, but they're not so, don't have that much impact. Because in fact, they're not necessarily understood by you. So therefore, the rational aspect is not as powerful. According to the Nefesh HaChayim, and so on, you don't really have to understand the mitzvah at all. And the significance of the mitzvah is really how much it's payel, how much it works in the Olamos HaGadolim, in the higher realms. Not how much you understand it as an individual. And of course, you don't know which mitzvahs are rewarded in which way, which will work out very well for the Nefesh HaChayim. Most of us have no clue which mitzvahs are better, higher mitzvah, which is a lower mitzvah, which mitzvah lights which bulb and which doesn't.
Would the same be true for
theirs?
Yeah.
Everything else.
Now, as I said, the Nefesh HaChayim, again, we could say it's the system. And the Chassidim have and again, as I said, this really works with the word car very much. Because this is, you take, there's a certain car of the system, pattern, carved, engraved, etched into creation. The Chassidim have a very similar approach. Of course, everything goes back to Arizal. The Chassidim and the Mitznagdim, right, the Nefesh HaChayim was a Mitznagdim, he was a Mitzvah. The Chassidim also, though, in this respect, both have to go back to Arizal just with slightly different approaches. The Hasidic approach is actually an approach which is a conglomeration of the Ramchal and the Nefesh HaChaim.
Who are you referring to?
Generic Hasidic. Most of what I said before is taken from Tzadik HaChaim. Abu Glin was one of the greatest Jewish thinkers in the world, 1900, and the P.S. Exeter, who was a friend with Thomas Shapiro, who was killed in the Second World War, the P.S. Exeter rather. And the idea behind mitzvahs, according to the Hasidic approach, is also, there's a system which God put in place. And mitzvahs grant the person kedusha. And the primary goal of an individual is to tap in to those resources which are deep inside an individual. Not to go and develop beyond oneself, but rather to develop within oneself. Now, why do I say this? Because there's a certain aspect which is stressed in Hasidus, which is that every Jew is hardwired for prophecy. In other words, Hasidus, but in by Misnagdim, you won't find so much the concept of communicating with God. Or rather, I should say, you'll communicate with God, but you don't look so much for God to communicate with you. In Hasidus, it's very important for you to feel that God is communicating with you. That's a really core value in Hasidus. And in fact, much of Hasidus is based on the assumption that if you do the right thing, you'll hear God speaking to you. I don't mean speaking to you in specific words and sentences, but you will sense your connection with Hashem. That's a critical thing in Hasidus. To sense that connection with Hashem. Now, Ritzav, probably the Chassid said, you are imagining things, you're delusional. God is not communicating with you. But, Chassid really strives and aspires to have that state of connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So then, and again, an axiom of that is that there's a system which is embedded within you. And therefore, the interesting ramification of that is that the Chassidim are very much against the concept of rational evidence of the existence of God and the validity of Torah. Have any of you ever read books which have to do with rational evidence of God and the existence of Torah?
Yeah.
So they don't like that.
Why?
Because that implies that you have to use your mind in order to understand God, which in fact will then become an intellectual relationship with God. Like, kind of like the Rambam. But they want you to tap deep into your soul and see that in your soul you are connected to God and God is actually speaking to you. And you shouldn't need to have all sorts of intellectual proofs. I don't need to have intellectual proof that there's a table in the room right now. Because the table is a fact. And I don't need to have reason out what there's a table. If I have to reason out about God, that means I'm at a distance from God. Therefore, I have to rationally go through proofs that He exists. But that's a default purpose. The whole idea is that you should try and delve deep into your soul and sense that connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the ultimate proof, or I shouldn't say proof, the ultimate experience of Emunah. Yes.
Then why was it that Hashem was given such an intellect?
Speak Ram, Chassidus.
Sorry?
Speak Ram. Chabad also had a problem to a certain extent, though. You should know, Chabad also had a problem. I actually was to mention tonight, so Rebbe's so we might as well mention it. I once read a very knowledgeable Chassid gave me to read a certain pamphlet about Chassidus Chabad, and there was one of the paradoxes which Chabad confronts. You know, the guy who wrote this was a modern day Chabadsker. I don't think the Baal HaTanya or the Tzemach HaTzedek would have been bothered by this issue, but obviously a contemporary Lubavitcher was. It says it's a great paradox, which is, how can you learn Torah? Because by learning Torah, you are accomplishing an intellectual awareness of God, an intellectual understanding of your relationship to God. But we want you really to have an emotional relationship with God, right? So therefore, you should really learn much less and say daven or sing, you know, or do all sorts of activities in which you try to connect to God, right? Yet at the same time, the Torah says the highest, biggest mitzvah is to learn. Yet when you learn, you're becoming more distant from Hashem. So how do you reconcile this paradox, this contradiction? You see the problem?
Learn how to sing.
What? Close. So the way this actually this Chassid resolved the issue is that there's certain Torah which has a unique quality that it's able to transcend the deficit of it being intellectual and able to retain the powerful, direct, emotional communication with Hashem. What Torah is that? Torah which was stated by Lubavitcher Rebbe, any Lubavitcher Rebbe. Because since Lubavitcher Rebbe was a connecting, was like the glue which connects the Jews to Hashem, so therefore the Torah which he says has that unique quality to connect the Jews to Hashem, even though it seems intellectual, it's really not.
So
it really has that profound connection.
That's why they mostly
that's why they only want to see this Chabad right, for that reason. So it was unique quality. So the idea of again in Hasidus is to tap into your soul, and the way you tap into your soul is by using those chukim, those mishpatim, everything which is within yourself. Now, that's the case. Eventually, you should be able to reach outright nevuah. Not you, because in our generation we can't really reach it, and not even the great rebbes had outright nevuah. But there is an aspiration which every Jew should have to try and tap into the deepest the deepest wellsprings of his capacity to communicate with Hashem, and attempt to achieve that throughout his life, and that's what the mitzvahs are supposed to lead to the highest possible level of communication with Hashem. Again, not that I speak to God, but rather that I hear what God has to say to me.
So both the Ramchal and the Nefesh HaChayim, I mean, Ramchal is Kedusha, but it's the same thing, right? You wanna get yourself on a higher level of Kedusha, you may communicate with God.
Well, the communication with God is not as germane in the Ramchal.
Kedusha in terms of, how is that different than...
Reading a holy life. In other words, it's more the idea of...
Sanctified.
Right. Everything I do with an attitude, I want to sanctify this world. Right? It's somewhat different, it's a very large similarity, right? But it's somewhat different than saying, well, everything I do, I want to tap into my relationship with Hashem. Right? You can be very holy and not necessarily be attempting to meet with Hashem.
Does that have a
Litzak
approach? Or
what is?
Like,
I'll get to the Litzak approach in a minute. Now, the thing is like this. If you look at things from the perspective of, saying, the Nefesh HaChaim or the Hasidic perspective, what's interesting is that really, the primary mitzvahs are the chukim. And because those are the ones which are clearly given just to tap in to the profound to the profound depths of the soul, to the profound heights of the heaven, and the mishpatim work the same way as chukim. It's not because... Some people are falling asleep, son. They're not because... See, I have a tendency to shout during shiur because I used to do a live shiur at night and early in the morning, and people used to fall asleep, so therefore I always feel I have to keep them awake. So they became an annoying habit of mine. So I have an annoying voice also to be honest, so that also helps. But the idea which the Kabbalistic schools represent is that it's not the logic of the mitzvah which is important, but rather it is the mitzvah as a tool to bring Kedusha, to bring whatever sanctity we're looking for. Whether it's the sanctity of the individual, whether it's the relationship with God, whether it's making the system work, to bring that down from Hashem. Or to bring that down from the higher realms. To bring that down from the source of Kedusha within the soul. And a mishpat is supposed to work like a chok. And actually, there are many aspects of our mishpatim which are like chukim. You know, there are certain areas in which Judaism has all sorts of different nuances, even in the mishpatim, which make them not necessarily precisely rational. But that's not the issue. Even though 100% logical, 100% rational, that's not the issue. The issue is that not, according to the Rambam, we're trying to make every chok into a mishpat. Right? Because we want to try and understand every chok as much as possible. Okay? So there's something to start with the obvious understanding, and then we work towards an understanding. But according to the Mekubalim, the Kabbalistic schools, primarily these three, it works the other way around. You don't want to, you're trying to make the Mishpatim into Chukim. that when a Jew fulfills the mitzvah of going to court, it's a mitzvah of going to court. It brings down kedusha to a person, right? When a Jew goes to, refrains from stealing, it brings down kedusha to the world. Not just that it's mine is mine and yours is yours. There are all sorts of aspects of bringing sanctity down to oneself to the world, which becomes then the primary underlying issue of all the mitzvahs. You see that? What?
What I've seen.
Right. So that's idea of chukim. Again, the Rishonim, many of them try to make chukim into mishpatim. The Achronim, many of them try to make mishpatim into chukim. Now, let's take it a little bit further. Then go. Let's go back to the parasha for Aduma.
I don't buy.
I'm not really sure you when you say bring kedushin to this world. Like, I have a hard time saying something good. I don't understand what it means to bring kedusha into this world.
When you do a mitzvah, then you bring kedushin to the world. The world then now gets, there's a spiritual energy which you bring into the world, which is called kedusha. The world becomes a holier place.
And holier just means tied, so that you
comes closer to its ultimate purpose. It makes it easier to serve God. There's more of an connection, spirituality in the world, which connects the world to God. All sorts of good stuff like that.
Revelation of Hashem's name, is that included in that?
What?
Like more of a revelation of Hashem's
Revelation of Hashem's name?
Hashem's presence.
Yeah, well, Hashem's presence is more, should be more sense. The holier the world is, sure. Just like the holier the place, the more you should sense the presence of Hashem.
And Rambam is in that school that they don't.
They don't see that as the direct reason for all mitzvahs, right? That's a value, but not the underlying purpose of all mitzvahs. The difference is saying that we have a value of making the world a holier place, and saying the reason mitzvahs were given were to make the world a holier place. You see that?
Yeah.
There's the difference between it's everything or part of it. Part of it, right? This is everything, or this is part of everything. Going to those who say it's been Kedusha, that's everything, that's the underlying theory of everything, the grand unification theory. According to others, it's not everything, it's a value, but not the ultimate underlying value of everything.
So according to Rambam, those reasons, what type of reasons are there? Are there more of more in this world reasons that we don't understand, or are there more like higher world?
This world, going around on this world,
right.
And more rational, right? Yeah.
So, as he incorporates kedusha or sanctity in the world, it's like,
well, among one of the mitzvahs to do is the mitzvah says kedusha too, should be holy. The mitzvah of holiness.
By studying Torah, is that
according
to Rambam?
By leading a life which is an upstanding, upright life. The Rambam tells the beginning of Hilchos Beis, he gives you the exact formula of how you can live a very holy life. Rambam does give you the first three prophets in Hilchos Beis, the first three chapters, tell you how to lead a holy life. It's a famous principle of Aristotle's golden mean. There's a whole bunch of things that Rambam says there about holiness. How to lead a proper holy life. Now, getting back to this week's parasha, Paraduma. Rashi begins the parasha Paraduma by saying that we have no Paraduma is a classic chok. And then Rashi goes to the first few psukim, and then Rashi comes back and goes to the same first few psukim, saying that I will now explain, according to Moshe Darshan, I think it is, what everything in the Paraduma represents. What do you mean? You just said there's no rational reason for it. It's a chok. And then you're going to come back and tell me what everything represents? Aren't you contradicting yourself? So you could say, has anybody done Rashi in this discussion yet?
Yeah. Yeah,
Rashi?
Knows
that, right? Okay. So the, it's very instructive. So there is an issue here. It's an issue which became a major issue in the 19th century with Rav Shamsham Fall Hirsch. Rabbi Hirsch was the great leader of German Jewry in the late 19th century, created a system in which all mitzvahs are symbols. In other words, you're supposed to be able to look in the mitzvah. This is what you see in Paraduma, what Rashi does here. Then every part of the mitzvah symbolizes something else. You know, like you have a shatnez can symbolize the fact that one shouldn't bring together two things which are the opposites. Everything has a symbolism to it. It represents something, a lesson to be learned. You should not say it has a reason why you do it, a tam for the mitzvah. By the way, the word tam, a mitzvah, tam a mitzvah means the reason for a mitzvah has another understanding. The word time in Hebrew means not just a reason, but rather a taste, a flavor. Every mitzvah has a specific flavor to it. And that's one of the things, if you were a Rishon, your time on mitzvah would be the time of the rational reason for it. If you're a metabolist, you're actually looking to taste the mitzvah, to have the flavor of that specific type of solution that the mitzvah imparts to you. So Rav Shamsa Volosh came along and said mitzvahs are symbols. And this is very similar to what Rashi said. You know, the paraduma is a symbol of the mother coming to clean up the daughter's mess, right? That's either egel azov, the golden calf is atoned for by the paraduma. So Rav Shamsa Volosh created a whole system like that. I have a book at home, which was just bought recently, which he wrote, which is the mitzvahs as symbols, a whole book about that. And there was a... this caused a lot of people to be not so happy with Rav Shamsa Volosh. Well, everybody held him as a big going and study, but certainly the Kabbalists, they don't like that idea. Because if you take mitzvah as a symbol, then the mitzvah represents something. And you're supposed to learn a lesson from the mitzvah. But we said before that, and then, it's like the Rambam, but not quite like the Rambam. Mitzvahs are rational, but they don't necessarily have reasons, but rather it's supposed to teach lessons. You see the difference between the two? If something has a reason, this is could be a functional reason why I'm supposed to do a mitzvah. The other way, if a mitzvah is a symbol, it's supposed to teach me a moral or ethical lesson about myself, about creation, about the Jewish people. So therefore, there's a similarity between the Rambam and Rav Shamsa Volosh, but not a complete similarity. But the Kabbalists look at this as a step backwards, or a step away from the right approach. Because again, then the mitzvah is not a tool in and of itself. It's not something which brings down Kedusha or taps into Kedusha, but rather it's something from which I have to learn. So therefore the question will be, but let's say I wasn't zoicha to read Rav Shamsa Volosh's book Chorev, or Chorev, as would say. So then would I be able to then do mitzvahs in a meaningful way? Because I won't be able to understand what each mitzvah represents, what its symbol is. Thing is, on the other hand, you have Rashi in the sixth parsha. Rashi in the sixth parsha says all sorts of symbolism in Paraduma. Yes, everybody agrees that there's a constant of symbolism. But the question is whether symbolism is the reason for the mitzvah or a way of contemplating what we can learn from the mitzvah.
So I'm sure it's the reason?
He would say yes. What it symbolizes, the messages which you can see from it, that is the reason for the mitzvah. Whereas the Kabbalists would say, no, the reason for the mitzvah is part of the system, right? Or there's another, of course, that we're showing there's a rational reason for it, right? But the symbolism is like another way of looking at the mitzvah, but not the reason for the mitzvah. That's why we come into the category of medrash. Medrash would be, is a separate category to them. It's not necessarily the reason for the mitzvah, but morals and lessons which one can learn from the mitzvah, whether that's the reason or not. So according to Rashi, when he says, Paraduma is a chok, he means ultimately, why Paraduma should have an impact on Tumah and Tara, and why there should be Tumah and Tara in the Torah, all to be both together, these are very strange things. And they're chokim. By the way, the Sfarim says the reason why there's Tumah is because there are little demons flying around, and the demons come and they feed on dead bodies, and when they feed on dead bodies, you get affected by those demons. So therefore, you become tummy. So that's an attempt to rationalize the understanding of tumma by invoking demons. But in any event, the idea is that you're supposed to be able to understand that there's a difference between the rationale. The difference between why a mitzvah is and what we can learn from the mitzvah. According to the Shas of all Earth, but what we can learn is the why of the mitzvah. Okay? Now, just to come to a final note, what we just said is a very, very basic distinction between different schools of thought today, which is that there's, which till this very day, resonates this very day, and there are those who say that we really can't even understand anyone. This actually is a very brisker litvish shita, which is that we really don't understand the why of anything. Fundamentally, every why is a gzeres hakadosh. But God said so. You have to know. God said so. You know? It's not important for you to know. You just have to do and understand. So really what's important is the what. Not the why it is, but the what. From that perspective, it's really coming full circle back to almost where the Sadia goes. And saying, not just about the chukim though, Tell us about the mishpatim. You do what you're supposed to do. Is there something behind it? I don't know. It's not your concern. Right now, you do what you're supposed to and learn how you're supposed to learn, and everything will be fine. It's not relevant to understand why things are the way they are. But again, according to all the schools of thought we saw today, other than this approach of reciting on, which has become more popular again nowadays to a certain extent, though most of the mixed schools of thought hold there is a why. The question is how to define why the mitzvahs are given. Yeah.
You make a mishpat
of the chok by doing the mishpat. Then fulfilling the mishpat is not in order to bring about civilized society,
right,
or in order to bring order to the world, or because it's rational not to steal, but rather because this is also a tool for bringing down kedusha. It's also being sanctified to the world, or tapped into the kedusha which is dormant in my soul. It's not something which has to do with making a civilized world like a mitzvah ben Noah, but it's something which brings kedusha, or if I don't do it, brings tuma or desolation spiritually to the world. Right, the hook is, yeah.
And what's the last approach?
Just do what you're supposed to do. Don't ask questions.
Learn a whole lot of details. Is that more
of a sense? Yeah, learn exactly. And learn a whole lot of details about how to do it. Yes. What?
Okay.
That's contemporary for contemporary. And again, it's very similar to Rabbi Soloveitchik's approach. There's Rabbi Soloveitchik from Boston. He once said that, you know, if God, I'm paraphrasing, he said, if God chose not to reveal these his thoughts and ideas, what is it my business to go and figure them out? So reveal them to me in his good time if he so pleases. In the meantime, I just do what I'm supposed to do. One of them are you?
I
subscribe to that to a certain extent, but not fully, because that would mean that you have no right to go about it. The way you just described it, you have no right to tap into a school of thought which is not prevalent in your time.
Right.
Which, that's a very difficult thing to say, because then how did any other school of thought arise without deciding about a school
right.
of thought? So, yeah, to a certain extent, it's true that, you know, there's a reason, obviously, Hashem made many different approaches to Torah, and the ones which are dominating your generation certainly are legitimate, right? Because there's another way, there's 70 ways of approaching Torah. But I wouldn't say that, and you must subscribe to that way as a result.
But it gives way different in our times, in
our day. Well, it probably speaks to people more, that's why it's probably more popular in our day. Right?
You wouldn't say that it's something very popular, so if we're doing it,
the only way?
Not the only way, but this is a beneficial. God knows our.
Yeah, but there's so much diversity in Judaism. Orthodox Judaism is a very diverse religion. There are lots and lots of different approaches within Orthodox Judaism. So.
Especially no one who's not religious doesn't know.
Right.
Because there's Orthodox and once you're Orthodox, that's it.
Yeah. So to say, you have a very big divide. You have Hasidim and Zionism. It's a very real and big divide. Anybody lives in Mosul knows. So so there are different approaches even today. And, you know, there is not one monolithic approach. Okay, we'll stop here.
That's also the modern Orthodox.